My name is JD. I'm a fourth year podiatry student from California School of Podiatric Medicine. So first of all, thank you for being here. Thank you for APHA, APMA support. It's very excited to be here. So today I'm presenting a topic on mycobacterium infection from nail salon, whirlpool, full baths, a call to action from podiatric medical students. Dr. Rocco, Dr. Extens are the PIs for this research. So I have nothing to disclose. So before I talk about the objectives, I just thought about this topic this morning. It's a very sensitive issue because a lot of people, especially girls, actually go to nail salons. And the reason for this study is not to steer any public fear or jeopardize people's jobs. It's really to look into the regulations. I'll talk more in detail and how if these regulations are implemented correctly or they're effective or not. Okay, so the objective today, I'll go over the problem real quick and examine the current guidelines, and I'll talk about my plan with my classmates and the future study goals. So the initial report was in 2002, but the outbreak started in 2000 in Northern California, Watsonville. There are four cases. A doctor made the link that these people actually went to the same nail salon, and they all present the same type of skin lesions, and they all failed the antibiotic treatment empirically. And their deep wound culture results with mycobacterium fortuitum. And Winthrop, publishing in New England Journal of Medicine in 2002, showing that there's a link, it's actually an outbreak beyond these four cases. And here's the study. So in his study or report in New England Journal of Medicine, that 110 people were identified being the victim of this outbreak, and 34 culture positive for rapid growing mycobacterium. And the mean interval, the median interval to from their exposure to the pedicure to the clinical appearance, it was about 23 days. And one person actually had a deep wound abscess deep to the proximal thigh, and they had to do a deep wound IND and clean up the abscess. So here's the clinical presentation. You can see how that that's the erythematous base, spider bite, they call it, flatulent boils, and they eventually will ulcer, and after long-term biotics will resolve with a scarring. It's actually a self-limiting disease, and maybe that's why it's a little bit overlooked, but the scarring, who wants to go to a pedicure and then have a scar up to their legs? So that was a concern. So rapid growing mycobacterium. It's a group of mycobacterium, unlike the regular mycobacterium that they grow, takes a long time to culture, they grow pretty fast. They're all non-TB mycobacteria. And they're opportunist pathogens. So not all the people who went to the same pedicure show these presentations, but I didn't find any paper looking into which people actually will have higher risk, but there are other risk factors I'll talk about in terms of why these people may have the infections compared to other people. Valgia in 2005 reported that the resource could, they're usually found in a municipal water system. So somehow this water maybe get into the public and then got the water polluted, and these the pedicure used the water that's contaminated with the rapid growing mycobacterium. or Mycobacterium fetusum specifically in Northern California and results with this outbreak. So you can see that the acid fast bacilli inside a white blood cell, this is just a histological slide from patient's wound culture and the PATH report showing that that's the infection. So we started a follow-up study in 2004, a report showing that what are the treatment options, the optimal treatment options for people who actually get infected. And the retrospective study, they used the same group of data, 110 people, and they were able to retrieve 48 people and then look into what kind of antibiotics they were used or the physician were prescribed. And Cipro was the most common dual antibiotics that was used, so it's used in addition to whatever combination of antibiotics. Whereas doxycycline and minocycline, you can see, were used, and they're the most common monotherapy antibiotics that was used. And this is a summary of, from the report, there's a whole list of different antibiotics were reported, and I just picked the top six because on an additional table in the report, they show the 29 isolates that they were able to culture from the patient's wound, showing that Cipro is actually the most effective antibiotic for this specific bacteria or infection, and as well as minocycline, but only 10 isolates will show susceptibility. So they conclude that the more the ulcer for a patient has, the more basically the more severe the disease, the longer the duration is going to happen, as well as the more, the longer, the delay that the ulcer treatment will have a longer duration. Basically, if you have longer duration, then it's just worse it can be. But again, it's a self-limited disease, but it can disseminate to a more proximal lymph nodes. So here's a quick literature review that I could have found. So Winthrop's study showed that leg shaving, that was a big risk factor. So people who shaved their legs before they went to the pedicure or they did a leg shaving in the pedicure, they have a way higher infections rate. And then that study I just talked about. And interestingly, ever since 2000 to 2005, there's pretty much no more study done on this specific topic. And maybe part of it is because the guidelines implemented and this outbreak is somehow subsided or no one is really looking into it. And the case report you can see from 2003 to 2011, it was done throughout the United States, but they don't have the consistent type of bacteria that's causing the outbreak. And in fact, after 2003 and 2005, there's no more report in California. And again, this report confirmed that leg shaving is a big risk factor for this infection. So the current guidelines, since 2000, this outbreak happened, and 2000 to Winthrop published, California's State of Public Health Department, I forgot the entire name, but they implement a guideline for the employees in the pedicure to follow how to clean up the foot bath, because the study showed that wherever the water level is, usually that's where the boils, the ulceration stops. So there's a correlation, and they actually culture behind the screen and found out that's where they can find the same bacteria that's causing the infection. So this is the specific guideline, the Title 16, Division 9, California Code of Regulation, Article 12. So let's go over the guideline real quick. So it's very specific, it's very tedious at the same time. So here's basically the summary. You drain and scrub this with the soap, with the water filled, and then you rinse for 10 minutes with the EPA registered hospital liquid disinfectant. And then you leave it for like 10 minutes, and then you drain it and clean it. Imagine this is actually between each client, and these people open up to have more people, not to slow down their business, just like how some hospitals do things. But at the end of the day, or after the last client, they would tell the workers to actually remove all their screens, scrub everything, and then rinse it with the 10 minutes, and then drain with detergent, and then fill with the clean water and circulate with the EPA, disinfecting for another 10 minutes. Imagine this is 10 p.m. already. And you dry with a clean paper towel. Okay. So, and each week, hopefully someone will take the initiative to do this. In addition to whatever I just talked about, they will leave the disinfectant in there for 6 to 10 hours, and then the next day they will drain it and rinse the basin with the clean water, and they refill the water with the basin with the clean water just before they start a business. So obviously there's some issues, the practical issues using these guidelines. We kind of just thinking about the estimate, so 10 minutes leaving the disinfectant, and before you have to scrub the screens, and afterwards you fill the water. So that's about 16 minutes between each client. So if we can't really tell the patient to take more than 3 pills, and then this is just not as easy. I just don't know if people are actually following the guidelines, but then we don't know. So then here comes the question. If the guidelines are effective, and if the compliance is not determined, then we don't know if it's actually the guidelines actually working. And so far, there's no publication, to my knowledge, that focus on the effectiveness of the guideline or the compliance of the guideline. Again, I just couldn't see anything published on this topic ever since 2005 in California. So then, our goal, our action plan in our school, my CSPM student chapter specifically, we have this 4 spaces for this study that I kind of talk with my team. So now we're in phase 1. We try to collect some data, very preliminary data, by doing survey in the local petty cares, the ones that use food bath. And then we'll test that hypothesis that the current guideline regulation are actually not hard to follow. And the phase 3, we will try to use the data we collect and suggest some modification to the guideline. The phase 4, that will be down the road. Hopefully all 9 school student chapters, we can do a nationwide study and then to see if we can do something about this. Funny thing is, the California Public Health, when they did the guidelines, there's no podiatry on board. It was mainly public health workers and MD, dermatologists, but this is in a foot, and I thought that was interesting. And that's why it got me into this topic, and then the student chapter decided to follow through with a long-term study. So the primary outcome for the phase 1, we would like to, again, present some epidemiological data on the rate of compliance to the current guidelines. And the secondary outcome, we like to analyze the data we collect and then identify potential factors that lead to non-compliance. And then, so then we can suggest a better modification to the guidelines to improve the compliance. So this is the current the status for our study. It's been review at school, IRB, and again, this is a long-term study for the school's student chapter, and we're also talking with California Alameda County Department of Public Health to see what we can do together, some kind of collaboration, and hopefully we can do a bigger scale to get this study move forward. So this is the team. David will be hopefully next year present to you some data that we collect, and then hopefully 2016 we'll have some more data or even updates for you. And Dr. Rocco is the PI who actually did a presentation at school, and that got me interested in the topic, and then we spent a lot of time with the whole team set up this study. And Dr. Stames is the clinical advisor. And thank you, that's my contact information to be continued, and thank you for your attention. I'm open to questions. Yes, Dr. Cook.
Have you
No, not yet, because we are starting small. We try to take baby steps. So I haven't looked into other states' guidelines. At some point, we will look into it. So far, it's California, because the outbreak started in California. We kind of want to see what's going on first in California.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes. So we're looking at just initially really just around the school. So even that one strip right next to school, we have about 10 to 15. So then now, because we're possibly working with the county public health department, we may increase that scale to probably to hundreds. And the one thing, there's a delay for collecting the data because we couldn't. It's really hard to cover that many food salons, that's one thing, and not all the food salons has used the same type of food bag. So then to do a very controlled, organized study, we have some challenge, and that's why there's a little bit delay. I was hoping I can have some preliminary data at this time so I can show you what we try to do. Right. So the whole, yeah. So the team, so far we have about almost eight people in the team, and we really just walk in the pedicure and then hand them this two page. The first page is the kind of like a consent, and the second page is the survey, and very simple questions. And we don't have people who can speak like me. I speak Mandarin, and other people speak English. Just because the population working in this industry, so then they can translate. But this survey is being reviewed at school IRB now. It's not actually implemented yet. So a lot of things are happening at the same time. So I know now. Yes.
So let's say the F1 takes up your data or whatever, and we admit to not doing all of the, following the guidelines. Could they be followed up and, they get repercussions for admitting that they didn't do that? So would that be a major survey? Would it help the organization sort of interest with not admitting that?
Yeah, well, so we already have that discussion with IRB. And that's why it's being reviewed at IRB. So basically what we do is there's no names, no salon's name on this survey. All we want to know is the over general whatever is happening now. We don't identify any one who failed the survey, we don't identify the salon, so all we want to see is just the percentage of very epidemiological data that we can gather in around the school or Alameda County. So hopefully that can protect people who participate in the study. And essentially we try to use these salons and then see if we can modify the guideline. But that I think that's an even bigger issue, because someone asked me, well, so then if we implement some kind of modified guidelines, would that violate the state law? Because that there's state guidelines. So then we're not at that phase here. We're just really gathering data at this point. And hopefully with a county on board, then we can doing something more without getting people into trouble or even school into trouble. Yeah.
Yes, that's more.
So I think that's actually the topic the county want us to focus on. But then we kind of want to focus on the guidelines. So then that's why we're still in a conversation with the county public health department. Obviously it's not a very single layer issue. There are multiple factors. If the patient shaved the legs, if the water is contaminated, if the person did not follow the guidelines and cleaned up, there are a lot of issues that can lead to that this outbreak or infection. So for our topic, I said at least at this point, we're focusing on the guidelines. But I tell the president-elect, Stephanie, that by the time their class is doing it, they should elaborate even more, because there's so much more in this topic they can look into, and they should look into it just because even if these people follow guidelines, then there's still other issues not identified, not looked into, then the problem's still there.